Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, podcast audience. All federal employees who hear the podcast. It's Tuesday night, 7:30, and as always, Ken Hodge and Robert Frost is here to try to enlighten or educate ourselves as we talk to federal employees, again, in particular postal employees, to items pertaining to injury compensation. This is a very popular, and I don't mean popular in a good way, subject matter if postal employees would grasp a hold of it. Every day, there's somebody getting hurt at work who, not just in our building, of course, but all over, somebody's getting hurt on the job, and they're not sure of what to do. You know, through months of doing this, I think we can all reasonably agree that postal management don't know what to do, or postal management is not going to do the right thing in most cases. And I have to say it's a lack of knowledge, because for me to say they don't do it because they want to violate the law, they pretty much don't operate in that manner. They're not very proficient at what they do. I don't think they set out to intentionally violate laws. So having said that, we started an injury compensation podcast, and I want to say you still see the same kind of nonsense. Last week I was leaving and I seen an employee sitting in our tour office, kind of bent over in pain. I'm sorry, about 2 weeks ago. And I asked, what's wrong? She said she got hurt. Her supervisor brought her up to the office, left her there, and then he left. And I said, are you going to the hospital? She said, I don't know. So naturally now I'm kind of fully engaged in this situation. And I say, let me look at your CA-1. She said, my what? And at that point, I asked the person working in the tour office, what is the status with this employee? And if they're hurt, do you think we could get her some medical care? And honestly, they began to get in gear to render treatment. But I'm just thinking, she told me, the employee told me, she had been sitting there at least 15 minutes. So if I hadn't, now again, it's a matter of coincidence, because I'm leaving at the same time she was sitting in there. But if I wasn't leaving then, or if I hadn't been to work that day, I wonder how long would she have sat in that office in pain while we wait for a supervisor to give her medical care and the proper injury compensation forms. You know, again, and so I'm glad when we do our injury compensation podcast, because our subject matter doesn't change often. I want you to understand that. For Robert and myself, injury compensation is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now, let me say this to you. It doesn't mean the agency is as efficient or proficient in what we understand should happen. So I don't want to confuse you. But we understand if you get hurt at work, right after you get medical care, you should go ahead and look at that CA-1 form. Now, notice, after you get medical care. Now, for years, the post office, that CA-1 form, they want that before you go to the hospital. And that's just not how it should be. But through podcasts such as this, through organizations like Federal Injury Centers, Elite Medical, there are people out there that have the knowledge to want the knowledge and desire to help you should you become injured at work. And before I turn over to Rob, I want to also say, when I talk about people that are here to help you, today I had a very interesting phone call with a law firm, O'Connor, Acini, and Levy. Now, they got a commercial. So as I was talking to the guy, I said to him, are you the guy from, is your picture on the commercial? And he thought that was very funny. But let me tell you why I called them. Because trust me, I've got a plethora of reasons to call them. But let me tell you why I spoke to them. I seen an ad where they do free consultations if you've been injured at work. Now, I got to tell you something. And please take this in the vein that I'm giving it to you. After you file your forms and your claims and you are still not being given proper rehabilitation treatment, you're still not being paid for hours left that you've used in conjunction with an on-the-job injury, I would not I get no referral fee. Let me try that again. I get no referral fees for what I'm about to say to you. But again, here's a law firm. If you've been injured at work, they will review your case for free. Now, automatically, that lets you know if you go and once again, my first and foremost plea to you is let's work within the system. Don't get that wrong. Don't for one second think that I'm asking you, you got hurt at work Monday night. They took you to the hospital in Wednesday. You think you should be entitled to more by Wednesday and you don't get it. So you want to get a lawyer. That's a waste of money. More times than not, the system will work. What I'm giving you information on tonight is for those few times that the system don't work, we have to be ready for that. And we, as in you, with advice coming from a lot of different places. Now, again, this OAL, O'Connor, Acini, and Levy, they'll review your case for free. No upfront cost. You don't get paid unless they win. So you might want to, again, what could it possibly hurt after the system has broken down for you? Now, again, and I want to keep saying that, after the system has broken down for you, what could it hurt to bring an outside source in? Because sometimes just a letter from an attorney will make postal management understand that this is no longer, oh, somebody just forgot to do something. Let's everybody get engaged so we get this issue on the table and then off the table. So, again, if you're injured at work and you, again, understand the process, understand the CA-10. It's the CA-10, correct, Rob?
Yes.
It gives you the list of events that take place if you get injured.
Yeah, it gives you the list of the forms and stuff you need.
Right. So I'm not asking you to digest all this information. I just really, 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 really need you to digest that CA-10. In fact, I would go get one and fold it and keep it in my pocket, because not so much for yourself, but if one of your peers at work is injured and you happen to see someone sitting in the tour office in the same manner that I saw, you would be in a position to say, wait a minute, hold on, and go right down the list. And I guarantee you, you'll be a benefit to whatever employee you do that act of kindness from, you know, whoever you do that act of kindness for. So again, I just wanted to open up the show tonight to let you know that O'Connor, Acini, and Levy, again, I have no connection to them. I get no referral fees. So this isn't about a moneymaker. This is just me introducing you to a law firm that deals with injured at work individuals for no money up front. So basically, you cannot lose unless you go there and you have something other than an actual case and the agency failed over many attempts to do the right thing. Now, if you got some case you made up, Well, when a lawyer talks to you, they're probably going to know that. And if they don't take your case, then that pretty much means you don't have a case. But if they take your case, then I would feel kind of confident that they're going to be able to bring you some type of monetary award. That's just my take on it. Now, there are probably a lot of other law firms who deal with this. I don't know. I just happened to see this advertisement, made a phone call, and I'm just introducing it to the podcast audience. So, other than that, what's going on, Rob?
Oh, well, we had another injured worker today. I don't have all the details yet.
How was the injury?
That I don't know either. One of the union stewards came to me asking if I still did injury comp stuff and that he was going to refer the guy to me.
Okay. Well, again, hey, that's a major step in the right direction.
Yes. No, it's
again,
up to the injured individual to contact me, but at
right.
least he's got my information.
Exactly. So he was referred because, you know, again, the mail handler union, they shy away from injury compensation like it was poison for some reason. They do. They kind of feel as if I give injury compensation advice, I'm liable. Listen, or in an injury compensation case, you're just informing the employee of what the employer should be doing. How that makes you liable, I'm not really certain what their viewpoint is on that. But anyway, it was, you know, last week, I don't know if I talked about it on the show last week, but there was an injury in Citygate where, now, again, I'm giving you mouth-to-ear word on the floor, not from a accident report or any official paperwork. But I take it a maintenance individual lost half his finger at an on-the-job injury. Did you hear about that one, Robert?
No, I did not.
Yeah, now, and we talk injury compensation here. And again, I don't know this to be a fact because I don't work in maintenance. I have a lot of friends in maintenance, but I don't work in maintenance. But my understanding is the action that caused him injury was one that he did on a consistent basis. Now, again, if you're working unsafe for the post office and whatever that unsafe act is, if it saves them time, I'm not saying what I'm saying is it's a real good possibility that they never saw you do that. So when it goes wrong, and see, this is where it hurts. And I got to say, if you're working unsafe, you're working unsafe. I'm sorry. But when your employer allows you to work unsafe and don't correct it, when you get hurt, how dare the employer now say you contributed to that accident? I mean, that's a real personal view. If I know you are not working safe as an employer and I do not take the steps to correct you, then I got to share in that, man. I'm sorry. That's my personal feeling. Because if you were really about your job, and about protecting the interests of the company you work for, even if that unsafe act was saving oodles and noodles of time, you would have corrected it. Now, I took that example and I tried to turn it over to what our new employees, the MHAs, I see them doing every day on our dock, and that is pulling more than one piece of equipment. Now, let me say this to you because this is all about injury compensation. When you're young, energetic, and coming in there, you grabbing three or four APCs, you move them. I'm not saying you can't because you are physically able to do that. But what you don't understand is that is a violation of safety rules and regulations. And if you get hurt, now you're looking at the post office to do something special for you because you did something special for them. And you're not going to find that. You'll find yourself at home calling Robert with injury compensation forms. So I kind of went off on a little bit of a tangent with that just to say, if you are working unsafe at work, folks, again, right in line with injury compensation, stop. There is nothing that you need to do unsafely at work that is that important. And I say that every day. There is nothing that you need to do, not a thing, at work that is so important that you need to work unsafe to get it done. I know a lot of people think on the docks that moving two APCs helps me get it cleaned off faster. But no, if you're out there by yourself, if you move one piece of equipment, you are working safe. You are preserving your body and you are working in the manner that the post office actually instructed you to work. So let's stay out of the injury compensation conversation altogether, because you work safe. Therefore, you just increase your chance dramatically, exponentially, that you're not going to have an accident at work. Now, again, notice you didn't remove it. You just increased it. So we talked about Akani. We talked about supervisors or managers or, excuse me, employers who allow unsafe acts to go on every day. But then when there is an injury, now all of a sudden they're trying to controvert injury compensation claims. But I do have a question for you, Robert. If I'm injured at work, let's say they put me off work, should there be any interruption in my paycheck?
No. You're supposed to, if your doctor puts you off work, the only interruption in your paycheck is you'll lose up to 3 days of pay, unless you want to use your sick leave or annual leave. Those first 3 days after you see the doctor, for example, they put you on light duty or limited duty, those first 3 days, you don't get paid for those. So if you want pay for them, you have to use your leave. But that's the whole purpose of what's called COP, continuance of pay. You're supposed to draw COP from the day you're put off work for a length of time of more than 3 days. Now, you don't have to use it all. All right. If your doctor says come back sooner, then you've still got more COP later if you need it. But continuous of pay means the post office is going to pay you for 45 days if you're off work for 45 days. However, 9 out of 10 supervisors won't mention it. In fact, your HRM, which is the person you have to file all of these documents with, the CA-7, the CA-1, all of these other documents, those go to your HRM. I hate to say it, but some of the HRMs are not going to mention it either unless you ask them about it. They will wait until your COP is about to run out before they say, oh, you're supposed to file for COP. If you don't do it today, you won't get it. And you have no recourse. If you don't get it in on time, you will not get paid COP pay. Right? Workers' comp does not pay until after the COP runs out.
So most people, or a lot of people, feel when they're out of work that they're pretty much going to be out of work about a month before their workers' comp is activated, or they start getting payments from workers' comp because they're not really made, or they're not aware of there is a continuation of pay until workers' comp kick in.
That's correct. And there's also a slight misconception of what you just said. A lot of people think that as well. Workers' comp is not going to pay you, period, until that COP pay is used up.
So let's just take an example. It's January 1st. I got injured at work. It's now January 20th. I missed a paycheck, and I'm starting to tweak a little bit. I'm trying to call COP. I'm calling my claim examiner. And what are they going to tell me?
They're going to tell you you have to file for COP. Your employer is supposed to be paying you.
So if I file for COP at this point, am I going to get my full 45 days, or do I get the days that are left in that 45-day window?
You get 45 days from the day you file, as long as you file within 30 days. Day 31, you don't get COP anymore.
See, now, a common misconception is COP starts 3 days after you're off work, because, again, you've got to use your leave for the first 3 days. If you don't use your COP, my understanding used to be, and the common misconception was, that 45-day calendar starts right after that third day. But you're saying
yes.
That 45, right after the third day. But if I don't use it.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but, okay, let's say 3 days have gone by. I use my 3 days leave. But I don't request COP until day 29. Now, my question is, do I lose that those days, or do I still get 45 days even though I filed it on day 29?
My understanding is the employer is supposed to back pay you for the COP for those 26 days. All right? Which means, and then going forward until you either come back to work or your 45 days ends for drawing COP, you'll get paid from that as well. But if you didn't know and didn't file till day 29, you are supposed to get that money back.
So when you file on day 29, so in other words, the 45-day clock actually starts from the day of injuries, 3 days after it that you're off work, your 45 days, no, I'm sorry, from the date of injury, 3 days after your 45-day clock starts. Now, if you file on day 29, they give you what you didn't file in back pay, but your 45-day end date is the same regardless of when you file.
No.
Okay.
You're confusing the 45-day with the 30-day. You have to file for COP within 30 days of the injury. And then your COP clock starts for 45 days. You understand what I'm saying? If you did not file until day 29, all right, they will backdate your pay to cover the missing 26 days. And then 26 plus whatever, 23, you get 23 more days of COP.
Okay, we're actually saying the same thing, just different. I understand what you're saying.
You could be right, yeah. I mean,
Yeah, we're saying the same thing.
I just don't want people.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I didn't want people to get confused, because when I first found out about COP, I thought it was 45 days to file. And I was one of those people on day 29 was told, you have to file today or you're not going to get it.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So don't get the two time periods confused. All right. I actually literally got mine in an hour before my window shut. So I got my money. And then I got it for the rest of the time period for that 45-day time period. But I didn't know about COP. I'd been injured twice and didn't know about it. I called up my workers' comp caseworker and let into her. Why am I not getting paid? And then she explained COP to me. Nobody had done that before. You still there? Ken? Hello?
Oh, I'm sorry, Rob. I have my microphone down. I was researching while we were talking, while you were talking. And I'm going to read this to you from the Federal Workers' Compensation. Continuation of pay is applicable to traumatic injuries only when one files OWCP form CA1. In essence, COP is a substitute for compensation benefits during the first 45 calendar days of an employee's wage loss. So, again, there is that 45-day starts, regardless if you file or not. You're still on that 45 days. If you file on day, still you have 30 days to file it. If you file on day 25, you're right. They're going to pay you for the 25 days plus the remaining days to make 45. Does that make sense?
Yes, that's what we were both saying.
Right. Okay. All right. I just wanted to make sure that because I've always heard that, you know, that's you got a clock. The clock says the clock is going regardless if you do anything or if you do, you know, if you do everything, if you do nothing, that clock is still ticking. So if you get hurt January the 1st, February 14th, if my math is right, your COP time is done.
Correct.
But you have to file for that within 30 days of the accident.
That is correct.
All right. Okay, we're good. So, again, just trying to make sure we give you accurate information, and we'll probably speak more on the COP because if we are explaining it correctly, and I'm sure we are, then that's something that a lot of employees miss, and they miss out on that because of not knowing. And nobody's really telling you that. Even though continuation of pay is a box that you check on your CA1, if you're injured and you're filling out forms, don't be surprised if you don't check that box. And I want to also say, I have known in many, many instances where supervisors made that selection for an employee. And that's not correct, y'all. I stated that to let you know that's not correct. What was your feelings on that, Rob?
No. What I was going to say was, what?
No, you're good.
Okay. All right. What I was going to say was, when you come back from the hospital, if you haven't already filled out the CA1, you will be required to fill it out. If anything is filled out for you, read it very carefully and make sure they haven't made selections for you that you don't agree with.
Because that's your right.
That's correct. Because they're not supposed to do that. They're not supposed to fill that form out for you, except for their part of it. You're supposed to put down your information and give your description, a brief one, of what happened. And if I remember correctly, I don't have it up because I'm having electrical problems right now. So if I remember correctly, there is a box on the CA1 that asks if you want to elect COP. All right?
Right.
If a supervisor has, like Kenny said, if he has checked no, you tell him to give you a new clean CA1. They don't have the right to make that choice for you. They may tell you they do, but they do not. This is a federal law, right? If they make that choice for you and insist on it, they're in violation. And the violation is falsifying a government document.
And the box that Robert is talking about on the CA1 is box 15, and you get to select continuation of pay, sick leave, or annual leave. Hey, but listen, that's the end of our 30-minute podcast today. But we'll come back to you next Tuesday night, and we'll talk more on that COP, and we'll break that down to a much simpler, digestible piece so that you'll fully understand your rights when it comes to continuation of pay. Hey, this is Ken Hodge on Hodge to Hodge on Blog Talk Radio. Thanking you for joining the Injury Conversation Podcast. Until next week, I'm going to say good night, and we'll see you next week. Good night, Rob.
Good night, everyone. Thank you for coming.
Talk to you next week.